right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. I'm Henrik, RedEyes.tv, RedEyesMembers.com. Hope you're having a wonderful day, wherever you are, whenever you're tuning into this. We have a great show lineup for you guys. Jim Goad is back on the show. We have plenty to talk about. Things have certainly improved since we spoke last time with Jim. We're basically like an inch away from like certain death, basically. But lots to get into. Jim, welcome back. Thank you for coming on.
Hey, folks. Hey, Vikings.
Good to see you, Jim. How have you been? I forget when it was, a year ago, maybe even more since we last spoke.
Maybe even a little more, but it's like, I think since the last time I spoke to you, I stopped writing for Tackies and write for Countercurrents now.
Yes. I've seen so many good articles. That's why I wanted to have you on, by the way. You wrote an excellent piece on the abortion issue, and we'll talk more about that in a moment. But anyway, proceed.
Yeah, and then the world started ending with the pandemic or the whatever that was, and the summer of Floyd, and now inflation, and nuclear war. It's Hemingway's suddenly, then all of a sudden, or gradually, then all of a sudden, we're at the all of a sudden moment of the world falling apart. But, you know, I think I used to be a lot more anxious than I am now. It's like, well,
it's weird.
Do
isn't
what
it?
You
like
can,
the closer you get, I kind of feel in the same way, in some weird way. I'm not sure why. Maybe it's just because it's so disconnected. It kind of feels unreal, and I guess I'm not certain like how close we actually are to like real existential danger. And many days, my rational brain kind of understands that, but emotionally, I'm like, yeah, it's fine.
I've been around obviously a long time. I don't remember any time where the entire public has been gaslit for so long. And I wrote an article about a year. I'm surprised there haven't been more riots and violent. I mean, yeah. I don't know if it's learned helplessness. If people don't think there's at this point, they've just given up. But man, if people get angry again, it's going to be really scary.
If you start messing with the food supply, and with, you know, it's one of the things I want to talk about later. I mean, there's like energy shortages now. There's food supply shortage. Even goddamn baby formula is like running out. Like, what? This is literally like begging, like, please, please, you know, go to our power center or centers of power and like drag us out of these buildings and like, you know, I don't know, put us in the gallows or something. You know what I mean?
I mean, I suppose he was Jewish, but Abraham Maslow was a psychologist. He came up with this idea of the hierarchy of needs, and it's sort of like a pyramid, where at the bottom, the basic needs, food, shelter, then you get up to, you know, philosophy, self-actualization. I always say, you know, when will things change? When people get hungry.
Yes.
And also when the pills run out. Everyone's so fucking medicated that you want some riots. I mean, the people on antidepressants and painkillers, when that there's a shortage of that, I think that's when it's all going to go off. There we go.
There it is, right.
Food, water, warmth. Yeah. Who cares about self-actualization or feeling become like if you're hungry, that's all.
Exactly. It's priority, right? I mean, yeah, it's true. I guess it's basic needs. It's actually like the fundament, right? Or like the base of the pyramid. Like if you don't have that, everything will fall over essentially, right?
Topple over, right?
But yeah, no, so this is very strange. And I mean, I remember even hearing this is years ago now, but like when the alt-right was kind of like in its, you know, peak in a way, there was buzz and Trump had, I think, just gotten elected or something. And you have the editor of the Atlantic magazine, what is his name again? Goldberg something, Michael Goldberg. I forget what his first name is.
They're interchangeable.
Something like that. One of the precious metal names, anyway.
Yeah.
He's saying that together with a bunch of other people. I forget, some journalist that just had, basically graduated, but she started writing for The Atlantic. But anyway, they're sitting there and talking about, like, how do we prevent from, like, something like the alt-right from ever, you know, kind of becoming larger? Or, like, is this dangerous? Should we be afraid the far-right is on the rise? And I remember Goldberg there, the editor-in-chief at The Atlantic, basically says, no, basically, we still, as long as we're providing, you know, basically, like, you know, carousels bread and circuses, right?
Like, bread and circuses, right.
It's like cheap calories and entertainment, it will keep them pacified. But again, entertainment, even sports now, they've ruined with all the BLM, you know, crap. And now they're messing with the food supply. So it's like, what do they want us to, like, fight back? Well, what's going on? You know,
the only sport I watch is boxing. And they haven't been able to make that woke yet.
Really?
And I mean, in the 80s and when I was a kid in the 70s, when Ali fought Frazier, there were no good white boxers. But I take solace. There are four different divisions, like in the heavyweight division in pro boxing, there's four different belts, four different sanctioning bodies. White guys have them all right now. So the best boxers in the world right now are white. Alexander Usyk from Ukraine, crazy talented boxer, and Tyson Fury, Irish Gypsy.
When was so Ingemar Johansson before your time? The Swedish boxer, he was good, wasn't he? Ingemar Johansson or Ingemar Johansson?
Johansson. Was like late '50s. He was right before I think Floyd Patterson beat him or something, and then came Sonny Liston, who was a complete thug, and Ali. there was a good 30 years you couldn't find a good white boxer.
Right, right. So that's
because you can't really make beating someone else's head in sensitive. There's, it's just in the format itself. It's just masculinity,
right?
And slug out the other guy until he's unconscious.
It's true. It is true. But again, I'm surprised. I'm trying to ruin it because all the BLM, stuff have nestled its way into the sports, right? So food supply, all that stuff. We'll get into a little bit more detail about that here. But tell us.
Jared Taylor once mentioned Ingemar Johansson. It was the beginning of one of his books. If you know his history, he was raised by pretty liberal Christian missionaries in Japan. But he remembers, even though this, he was biased that way or had been taught to think that way. He remember like when Johansson lost, I think it was to Floyd Patterson or Sonny Liston. Floyd Patterson.
Johansson won the title by defeating Floyd Patterson via third round stoppage. I don't even know what that is.
Probably stoppage means knockout. He's down for 10 seconds and can't get up.
Right.
But whoever beat him, I think it was probably Sonny Liston if this is the time frame. But Jared Taylor, even though he'd been taught not to think racially, he didn't like that the white guy lost. And I remember even like when I was like in my teens and had been absorbed all the TV sitcoms and everything you learn, they don't even admit that they're teaching you on TV. Even then, like I'd watch a basketball game, the white guy would get a basket. I'd be like, yes, yes. Counterintuitively, there'd be that instinct.
It's like, exactly. What's that about? Right. Yeah. Exactly. Like inexplicit, is that the right word? Alignment with your group, with your ethnic, belonging, basically.
Even though you've been scolded and frightened into thinking it's bad.
Yep. Right. Exactly. Yeah. No, it's true. Holy shit. Yeah. He was born in Gothenburg. Look at that. Died in Kungsbacka. Yeah. Holy smokes. In 2009.
They've got a Swede right now, Robert Hellenius, Hellenius. He's like called the Nordic Nightmare.
I've not followed boxing, but that's interesting. Okay, but this is like just pure, like the what do you call it, classic orthodox or something, right? Not like MMA or something like that.
Just fisticuffs, Marcus of Queensbury rules. But orthodox stance in boxing is right-handed and southpaw is left-handed. I'm left-handed.
Oh, gotcha. Okay,
which does give me an advantage because people don't expect to be hit from that angle.
Yeah,
just
right.
Because we're like 8% of the population.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk a bit about the article here. Let's begin with the Supreme Court ruling. Now, I have to say first, and a lot to break down here, right? But as it's been kind of unfolding, as with all things, my position on it has kind of evolved a little bit. You're like, especially when you see the kind of spurgs that are like protesting this, and it's like, is this really the people we want to reproduce kind of thing? But your article was great because it was titled "An Extra 20 Million George Floyd." So break that down for us and explain what you talk about in the article.
I mean, it's such an emotionally laden topic. I can't get worked up either way about abortion because I think it's murder. I think it's obviously a life form. And they talk about viability. Well, I know people that are in their 50s who aren't viable and can't like survive without support and someone wiping their bottoms and everything. I think that's why the left has a problem with it because they don't like to admit that they hate murder. I'm the result of a failed abortion. As my brother tells me the story, and I know I've told this story many times, but number one, I'm senile, but number two, it's apropos of the topic. As the story was related to me, my dad punched my mom in the stomach trying to abort me, and I survived. So I guess at least in that one case, I'm against abortion. The rhetoric behind it, choice. The man has no choice in the matter at all.
Right.
I mean, his body doesn't matter. He has no choice like to avoid jail if he doesn't pay child support. But I looked at it like from a depth, and I know that the mystical, traditional, spiritual right thinks it's an abomination. Fine, but I wanted to look at it mathematically. And the fact is, and maybe Margaret Sanger was onto something, but I think per capita, three times as many black babies are aborted than white babies. And as of 2014, oh my God.
Do you see this one?
I mean, that's a, yeah, I don't know if you could do a retroactive abortion, but there's one for you right there. But
yes.
But and I did an article about abortion in 2014. At that time, there were an estimated 20 million black fetuses aborted from 1973 to 2014. It's probably 30 million George Floyds. So basically, if there had been no abortion, I mean, there'd be the back alley abortions with the rusty coat hangers and everything, but what we'd be looking at is like a 20 or 30 million extra George Floyds. And it's something to, I mean, as conservative and traditional as you want, that would probably be the result.
Yeah. And so that's,
I think we had enough. We had sufficient George Floyds. We don't need any more George Floyds. We need some scholars. We need some people who are able to do physics and calculus, but, what is she yammering about here?
She was basically, I'm killing my baby. And like, I mean, literally,
oh,
like
she's bragging about
a lunatic. Yeah. Like, I mean, obviously this is like an effigy or whatever you want to call it, the doll. Right. But she's like, you know, dragging it out of her stomach and then beating it against the ground and like, I'm killing my baby. I mean, clearly like mentally ill. Right. But this is what I'm saying. It's like, look, I don't like the abortion. I've been over this on some shows, but if we have like, you know, newcomers tuning in and just, you know, listening to this show, obviously, I don't like the industry around it. I think it is. And well, yeah, watch out here. I got to blur this out or something, but it's a spread eagle here. But anyway, I don't like the whole industry around it. And, you know, I think it is being used. There's people that are making money, businesses making money on fetuses. They're experimenting on it. They're using stem cells from it. Like there's a whole field around this, which has been built up. But if you look at it again, as you said, kind of cold and mathematically, it's like, look, you could argue, you know, are we overpopulated? We're not. Many people say we're not, but if we don't do anything about it, obviously we will be because of our success at some point. Do we have to go right up until the very edge of like being, oh, now we're basically overpopulated, so now it's okay to tackle this question, as opposed to doing it, you know, kind of right now. Right. You know, I don't want to live like this, you know, like that. Sweden is a big country for its population numbers, but I'm traveling around in Sweden.
There you go. There's your 20 million George Floyds coming in, right? The train.
And it's like, I want forests. I want nature. I want, you know, where I can go distances without human development and stuff like that. And it's not because I'm anti-human or anything like that. I'm just trying to realistically look at this. You know what I mean?
And like, or if you're into eugenics at all, I suppose, you know, abortion serves a purpose.
Yeah.
I mean, in my life, I think I've created one fetus that got aborted. It was to a girlfriend shortly after I got out of the joint. She wouldn't have been a stable mom. She had an abortion. I remember coming home from work and she's throwing up into some paper bag because the abortion didn't suit her well or anything. But
yeah.
I've known girls who thought it was cool to get abortions, which is sort of
twisting. That's where our culture is now. And again, I think that's the rational, emotional, correct, you know, if anybody has somewhat of a moral compass, and I know you've made the point before on this show, and it's good. It's not whether it's right or wrong, but it's whether it's true or false. Exactly, right? So that I totally get. But I get it. People feel, you know, they feel bad. Their emotions, you know, they spring from something, right? A sense like, you know, if you've seen one of these like fetuses crawling around in a bucket, you know what I mean? And try like gasping for air. Like,
sure.
That's probably pretty difficult to see, you know what I mean? But I think the discussion is framed in the wrong kind of way. Because really, women, as far as women are concerned, why aren't they taught about their cycles, right? It's basically like a period of like 3 days or something like that. You know,
kind of another thing I put in this article. At this point, like if you're an adult, because you still have people going into hospitals 9 months pregnant and don't realize they're pregnant. And if, you know, at this point, though, like there are morning after, there are condoms, you know, there's the pill, there's the morning after pill. If you don't have ethical problems with that, but there's really no need for abortion, really. But what I was thinking before is like the girls I knew who thought abortion was cool, they were obviously scarred by it. And I think they were compensating by acting like it was cool. But I've never known a woman to become suddenly sane by squeezing a baby out either. So,
right.
You know, I don't know if it messes them up more or less.
But, I think I have. You could argue in a way that like when they all of a sudden were responsible for something outside of themselves. They did actually lose some of their crazy tendencies, and they're like, they had to straighten out essentially, right? Because now they're responsible for someone else. I think there's something that could be argued generally, right? I think that that's true, that women and even men, they generally get more conservative, traditionally minded when they start getting kids, right?
It's a spectrum, or they start hitting their kid. I mean, there's a whole rainbow of possible experiences. That's why, I don't identify as concerned. Everybody's, oh, family. It's like, well, you must have come from a good one, because there are bad ones too. I could go either, like I said, in my case, but if the kid's unwanted and doesn't have much of a future, I'm not sure which is more ethical, just aborting the fetus or letting them grow up in that environment.
Yeah, because it's also something to be said for like these miserable people and their lives and just the crab mentality. Like, let me play one clip as an example, right? You might not have seen this yet, but here's another lunatic here.
I hadn't seen the black abortion
show. Oh, you hadn't seen that one? Yeah, that one is a that one is a good one. But I do have another one here. Let me just find the audio so we can also hear this real quick here. But it's this idea of like, what do they call it? Crab mentality, right? The if one crab is trying to get out of the bucket,
they grab
just to pull you kind of back down again. Right. And that's kind of the sense I get from this woman here. Listen to this here.
It's my body, it's my choice. As I said before, my mother didn't have a choice, so I'm here. But I have 57 years of misery. If she had a choice, she would have made different decisions, and I might not have been here, and nobody would have been wiser. Give her her choice, but rather than she having a choice was made for her because she didn't have it, and she brought teacher into the world that she didn't want.
Go ahead, Jim.
It's such semantic nonsense because, I mean, I think that they not pro-life, pro-choice, pro-abortion or anti-abortion. Let's just be honest, like that's, because like I said, if I accidentally knock someone up, I have no choice. If I want the kid, I have no choice in it. It's right. Her body. It's her choice.
Yeah.
I have no choice not to pay child. None of that stuff. So it's just dishonest. But a lot of these are just annoying, neurotic women who, and I wrote an intro. I'm doing a reprint of this magazine I did in the 90s. But, I talk about what's changed since the 90s. But the internet really made me realize how easily people were led. I always knew they were easily led, but when you see the same people spouting the same, and all of a sudden they all like Ukraine, and all of a sudden, they think women are men. It's, and I think, that sort of memification of everything happens on the right side too, obviously. And you have people that are just as easily led.
But, oh, definitely.
I mean, abortion, I guess it has its place.
Yeah, I think, again, from my point of view, I would want to rephrase it because I am generally against it. Again, there's a very small cases, right, of rape or incest, things like that. Or something is terribly wrong in this life is just going to be like suffering and misery and stuff like that, right?
I mean, you're going to have to, these surveys, you're going to have to assume that the women who are getting the abortions are being honest, but apparently, rape and incest are only like one combined, or like 1.5%.
Exactly, very low. In other words, they're treating abortion as a contraceptive, essentially, right?
It's like poor people or the unemployed. They'll use emergency rooms and never pay anything. Yeah,
but so it's like 3 days essentially. Like no penis and vagina. Like 3 days a month or what? Something like that, right? Like isn't that, and if they're so goddamn adamant about like killing these babies, right? Why don't they get sterilized then? Maybe that's what the discussion should be. Maybe sterilization as an option. Like that way, you won't kill innocent babies, and these miserable people who hate life won't be able to reproduce.
Because I mean, that's a tantalizing proposition, but try like not having cities burned down. The thing too. There's something called the heckler's veto. Do you know that concept?
Yeah, I've heard of it, but explain it again.
People are afraid to do anything because people will burn things down or, harass them and scare them and run them out of their house. And like what happened to Tucker Carlson, but that's what the world's become. And it was understood a couple decades ago that that's unethical and no world can operate when we're just going to let the hotheads rule everything because they might get too upset and burn something down.
Yeah.
But that's, with everything.
But that's been weaponized consciously now. It's not just a mob reacting like spontaneously. You know what I mean?
That's what I mean. That people, they're depressingly easily led.
Yeah.
And whether they think so, I mean, I think it's probably humiliating to admit that. And most people probably aren't intelligent enough to even realize it, even if you explain it to them.
Yeah.
What was, I think it was Mark Twain who said it's easier to swindle somebody, to lie to somebody, than to persuade them they've been lied to. I think that's true.
Yeah, exactly. Is that, it reminds me of this meme, right? 2020, George Floyd, Biden, Harris, all that stuff done. Mask on, you know, shot in the arm, and then straight to Ukraine. Programming is that flipping a switch, and now it's like, you know, now it's the abortion issue. And of course, that also means that all the previous things, which were big stories, like landmark, like historical things, such as the pandemic, or, you know, it's just basically forgotten, essentially. You know, I mean, it's just like, well, that's it. Moving on.
Cognitive dissonance is strong. People, and this is another reason I regret becoming a writer. I really thought that most people were like me, because as arrogant as I am and as right as I think I am, 98% of the time, like a lot of times, it's like, oh, I never considered it that way. Like,
yeah,
there's an extra piece of the puzzle. Yeah, I was wrong. Most people won't do that. Most people have that sort of dumb pride that they'd rather double down, triple down, quadruple down on the deception rather than say, oh, I was fooled.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, they can't admit that. That would be too much for them, to be honest. So you have
what's going on in this picture?
Yeah. So this is as one example, right? That just the cruel, almost, I mean, I'm not going to say satanic, but like monstrous or demonic like tendencies of some of these women that are like,
gloating. I didn't know what that, so she's got like a psychotic serial killer infant fetus with a knife in its skull,
stabbed through the, like, this is, and that's, I guess, a tattoo that she put on her, right? So
you always wonder, like, I got one stupid tattoo here and it had a girl's name on it, and I always, like, just so I don't look like a complete idiot, I always tell people she got my name first. But like, you always wonder, like, if she makes it to 80.
I know, and this is what I'm talking about, like, you know, I mean, as you said, the realistic possibility of this. But again, I'm like, well, if this is, how is it that you can have someone who can, you know, they're calling somebody like, hey, man, I'm thinking about like blowing up a building, or I'm going to go kill someone, right? They could be arrested for that, right? You're not allowed to communicate those kinds of things, right? What's the difference here?
I think there's a fine line. I think it's like, if I'm thinking about it, I think that's one thing.
Okay. So, but
it's still, it's not a direct, like, you know, at 8 o'clock, I'm going to go and blow up this building. I think that's when it becomes a terroristic threat.
Okay,
I could be wrong.
But in a way, it is kind of like a pre-crime thing, right? Like, okay, it hasn't happened yet technically, but the person says that they're going to do it. You know, that's still within the realm of pre-crime. But my point is, like, you could argue, and you know, it's a little stretch maybe, but you could argue in a way, like, if all these women are talking about like how we're gonna, like, I'm gonna murder babies because I get off on that, like, what gives them the right then to reproduce in a way, right? Like, how do we know that they won't be like sadistic and actually go kill their babies if this is the mentality?
That's what I meant earlier when I said, like, I've known women who seem like they were, I mean, I've known rape victims who were messed up by being raped, women who were definitely messed up by killing their own fetuses, but
yeah.
Known women who've had 8 kids and were messed up. What's the common denominator? Women.
There you go. You got it. Let's just take care of that
problem. I wonder with some of them, it's the strain of childbirth gives them an aneurysm or something, because it doesn't make some women rational. It makes them worse.
Interesting. But. Okay. Yeah. My experience has been kind of the opposite for the most part. But no, I mean, of course, at this point, anything's possible, right?
There's a great book called When She Was Bad. It's about female violence. It's by a woman, Patricia Pearson. She has a really compelling chapter about sudden infant death syndrome, where this phenomenon that suddenly erupted in the 70s and 80s, where all these babies were just, you know, the mom went to brush her teeth, the baby's dead. She said there's no evidence that there's any kind of medical condition or syndrome that causes this. She thinks it's infanticide.
Really?
And that, I mean, there are statistics as far as violence. I saw one stat, like 80% of a person's, like in 80% of the cases, a person's first exposure to violence in life will be at the hands of their mom.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't think it's pornography or the patriarchy or, you know, combat sports that cause misogyny. I think it's being hit by your mom, perhaps.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. No.
But it's funny, like these constructions like racism, sexism, they're brilliantly constructed because they imply that they couldn't, like women or non-whites could possibly do anything that would make someone hate them.
Right, right.
They have a complete like orb force field of innocence around them. That's dangerous because that there you will have that will like invite all the psychopaths in that group to forge all kinds of hate crimes. And I just provided you with a great segue to that other story. Portland guy.
Oh, that one. That's right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, we have a bunch of things we want to get into.
I had a few encounters with that guy.
Last thing I want to mention about the abortion thing here. And, you know, we kind of imply, you know, the demographics and stuff, right? But, like, you know, just look at something like this, right? 10,000 years of human activity, and we have a parabolic growth, right? And people are like, what are you talking about? Like, overpopulation is a globalist talking point. And it's like, yes, it is. They're using that against us. They do want to limit our numbers. I get that. But the point is, that doesn't mean that they're wrong. I just don't want they to be the ones who choose it. They're sadistic, and they would, like, obviously go for a dysgenic approach as opposed to a eugenic one, right? Look at this. How is this,
right?
You know, where do we go from here? You know, it's
sustainable.
Like, yeah.
Another, well, you know, the disadvantage of being born in 1961 is that you'll die sooner than other people, but you also have some perspective. I remember in the 70s, it was called ZPG. They talked about zero population growth. That was a firm thing in the leftist platform. Was the world's going to be overpopulated? What was it, Paul Ehrlich, the population bomb?
Yep, and you had the Club of Rome, the limits to growth, you know, these kinds of publications coming out in the 70s.
If you believe, you know, people create pollution and climate change, like more people's just, and especially in Africa, and is going to create more pollution. My hunch, why the left stopped talking about overpopulation, they looked at the charts and saw where all the population growth was and just, like, I guess thought it would be racist to be against overpopulation because it's not increasing in Europe or, you know, it's,
here's
you
the,
look at the maps,
the headline,
yeah,
right,
we're going to have like 4 billion, 10 billion by 10, oh, come on.
Yeah,
I think
Africa.
Steve Saylor like predicted 4 billion by the end of the century, now 10 billion by 2050. Oh, man.
And of course, ironically, that's because of Western advancements, right? I mean, these societies wouldn't be where they are without that. And again, intervention where, I mean, I'm not saying, again, this is not about moral or wrong or right. It's just looking at it like in cold, hard, like facts and numbers. And at the end of the day, it's like, well, we might not like it, but nature is the way it is. And we didn't make up the rules. And it's like, it's either our kids or it's their kids, you know, in a way, right? Especially now, because I think we're, you know, yes, I know that the shortages, and it's very artificial. And they're seeking to use this to kind of reform society, but it's anybody with a brain can look at this and just realize, like, look, at some point there's a limitation to how many mouths we can feed, and is everyone going to live a first world lifestyle and, you know, have three cars and, you know, a huge house and a boat, and like, it's just not going to work, you know what I mean? And so at some point we have to make hard decisions, and I prefer us to do that, take them now, as opposed to wait and be passive and let just haul this off onto our kids or our grandkids, Jim.
Right, right. No, it's, I mean, this is going to be an unpopular take, too. I think a flaw of human psychology is thinking there's an answer to everything or thinking that we're smart enough to figure it out. I'm not smart enough to figure out how to cure overpopulation or the demographics problem.
Sure.
Someone else is, but there might not be an answer.
Well,
but I'm not sure abortion is the biggest problem we have right now. So it's the people who haven't been aborted that are the biggest problem now.
It's cruel and it's evil. Again, I don't like the abortion.
Are gone. They're not causing any problems. Know. It's the ones who slip through the goalie. Yeah.
No, again, I think it's about, I guess, the kind of, there is such a thing as, and it's, I mean, to some, they will just deny this and it sounds so contradictory, it's just ridiculous, but like a compassionate-oriented eugenics, like, if we can improve the human species overall, why would we not want to do that? Why is it that, well, the Nazis, right, that's the argument in a way, right? They wanted eugenics, so we have to do the exact opposite. The only, you know, right thing to do, morally correct thing to do, is to have as many, you know, I don't mean to offend anybody out there, but as many retards and dependent people as possible. That's going to make things better, right? Like, come on, you know what I mean?
I mean, the Nazis, like, they get blamed for a lot of things. And they, I mean, you can't talk about any of those things. Or you can't even talk about, I guess, like, by outgunning the Nazis, the Russians and the West, This is amazing to me. They think that wars actually solve ideological problems. The only things that wars solve is like who was the better fighter, you know, and who had the better military.
Right. Yeah.
But like whoever wins gets to decide what's right and wrong. So any ideas the Nazis had, you'll be killed for. That's just always been the way it works.
That's right.
And it's, I mean, I don't know. You know the name Michael Malice?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We had each other's phone numbers, talked, you know, once a week. But he had me on his show in late 2018. And it was when my book, Whiteness, the Original Sin, came out. And he was real skeptical that there's this concerted, or that there's even like a preponderance of anti-white rhetoric in the media, which is astonishing.
Wow. Okay.
But the last thing he asked me, and Michael Malice is this little Ukrainian Jewish guy, he asked me if I thought that that Hitler gets a bad rap in the press, and maybe this was set up as a trap, you know. But I said, of course he does. And he didn't let me elaborate. That was the end of the show, and he never talked to me after that.
Oh, geez. Okay, well, there you go, right?
But it's just common sense. Like, whoever loses a war is
going to, exactly. Of course it
becomes evil immediately.
No, they're totally fair and objective when it comes to this issue.
Right. But it's just this principle that the bad guys always lose. I guess, you know, it's like a Hollywood movie. Like, what are the odds? The Confederates were the bad guys, and they lost. And I guess, They revise that when it's, well, you know, it's, you never hear them say to the Cherokee, oh, give it up, you lost, like, grow up, it's the modern world.
Yeah.
It's only like white people who
get lectured. But shouldn't they? Shouldn't one of the arguments be, well, why did they not open their arms to diversity and, you know, multiculturalism, as we're expected to?
I have to tell you, like, I'll give it to them more than current white people in America.
These are some fought vicious, back.
Ruthless fighters, yeah.
At least they did that. Some balls in there.
I've told this story before, so I'm not. I mean, Gavin's a friend, and but the first night I met him, I was with this girl who was part Cherokee. I don't drink. I haven't had a drink. I just passed 40 years without a drink. And Gavin likes to drink. This girl liked to drink, and he's sloshed, and she's sitting next to me. He's like, so what's up with you guys, the Indians, like? You never could figure out the wheel? Like, okay, I understand, but you couldn't start with an octagon and then chip away? And man, did she get pissed off.
Yeah,
but that's kind of what made me just realistic. It's like, yeah, there's unfairness in the world, I guess, if you think you can measure unfairness. But the reason I think some of these oppressed indigenous people were overtaken is they didn't know how to defend what they had.
Right.
They didn't have the technology. You know, it's not right and wrong. It's like gun. Who had guns and who had sticks.
Yeah. I mean, that's
usually what determines it.
That's, again, self-evident. Like, you look at the rules of nature and there's no referee. No one's going to come down. No. Hang on a sec. You know, this is unfair. You know, it's just like, no, it's ruthless, it's brutal, and it's a survival game at the end of the day. And you might not like it, but the fact is, if you get your, that's why they call it pathological altruism, right? You're so, you know, you care so much about everyone else that, like, you will be replaced or you'll be removed or killed or whatever. I mean, you could argue the same thing of, like, the person who's like, an instinctual feeling. He's walking alone on the street and there's a gang in front of him, but one of these, it looks like it's just a bunch of, you know, black guys, or in Sweden is a Muslim gang or something, right? But you're not allowed to, like, cross the street and go, you know, or like dodge off, because what if they get offended because they think you're a racist or something?
I've got a story related to that one, and actually there's a Michael Malice element in that one too. This is like, and I did it, it's in my Whiteness, the Original Sin book. It's called Mugging Me Softly. I was in Brooklyn, and I had to meet Michael for dinner. I had to walk like a mile on dark streets. And I'm walking along, and New York's supposed to be a first world city, but some of these streets are really dark and poorly lit. And I'm walking, and all of a sudden, my peripheral vision, I see there's a black guy walking about 4 to 5 feet to my right, but kind of keeping pace with me. Your first instinct is to think, all right, just a coincidence, one of us will walk faster. No. So I went a full block. He's right next to me. I cross the street. He's still tailing me. After another half block, I stop. I'm like, what's up, man? Why are you, like, tailing me? And he looked dusted out. He just, like, nodded his head. But this is the capper on this. Like, so I'm thinking, okay, I'm being set up for some kind of ambush. I don't know what's going to happen. Oh, there's my hometown. There's Philadelphia. That's Kensington. Yeah, I did a whole article about Kensington a few months back. It's like the biggest heroin open air market in the United States now.
It's crazy, yeah.
But this guy, and he went on for like 6 or 7 blocks. I finally saw in Williamsburg, these two girls were closing up a bakery. I walk up to them, and the black guy's walking right next to me. And I'm like, look, I know this is weird and this is not your issue or whatever, but this guy won't tell me why he's following me. And it's just kind of weird. And they're like, well, you want to wait inside the bakery? We can open. I'm like, nah, you know, like you want us to call the cops? And I'm like, I don't know. The minute they said cops, he bolted.
Right. Yeah.
But the punchline or the real tragedy that was going on is I'm walking along thinking I might be being set up for murder. But if this guy attacks me and I fight back,
you
got the shaved head. Yep. That's from brain surgery.
Yeah, right.
But how is it going to look?
Yep. Yep.
Imagine you have to, like, just mm-hmm. defending yourself. You worry if you're going to become the next Derek Chauvin.
Exactly. Yep. That's true. Absolutely. I've been thinking about that, too. Like, if something happens, we're out or something, like, I just have to basically run. Because he was a neo-Nazi and he had, you know what I mean? Like, and it doesn't even matter who the,
The current year that makes it a neo-Nazi, or is there a different innovation? Like, yeah. Is there anything, like, is it like new Coke, or is like, can you be a classic Nazi these days?
I guess so.
Or are they like all neo-Nazis?
OG. Like, I'm the OG, man.
This is astonishing, because if you've ever seen any of the Rocky movies, this is where Rocky lives. This is Kensington.
Oh, really? Yeah. Wow.
There's Rocky V's, the one where he hires because Rocky got brain damage. Imagine Sylvester Stallone trying to sound dumber than he naturally sounds, but he couldn't fight anymore. So he hires the protege is this young white boxer called Tommy Gunn, who was actually Tommy Morrison, a blonde white guy from Tennessee who briefly was the heavyweight champion in the early 90s. But at the end, Rocky winds up fighting Tommy Gunn in the streets. And, you know, it's dark and it's dingy, but you don't have tent cities and junkies shooting up and nodding out.
Right.
Kensington was always bad, but it's
worse
amazing
now.
How bad it is now.
I know. Yeah, I brought it up for the, you know, the New York reference there, obviously. And again, I mean, it kind of harkens back to what we talked about, that word, 20 million edition. Like, is this the future? You're just for conservatives to win again. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, or you know, I'm not trying to make a moral value judgment. I'm just saying this is the future we're looking at if we don't do anything about all the bullshit going on right now.
Yeah. What's real noticeable, because that's either like Frankfurt Avenue or Kensington Avenue. It kind of like turns into one, but it's under
Frankfurt
the elevated
right there,
subway.
Yeah, it says Frank.
Kensington,
Frankfurt
there was
line.
A book written about it, and I think it was 1968, called White Town, USA.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
The dividing line, this street, the subway, was a dividing line between almost entirely. Kensington in like 1968 was like 98% white. But these were like the descendants of Irish, and they were hardcore, low-class, fighting whites. And the blacks didn't, like, they weren't caught in Kensington after sunset, and you sure as hell weren't white caught in. There were the Philadelphia Badlands, which were a buffer zone between white Kensington. Badlands were the Puerto Rican neighborhoods, which were the worst in Philadelphia. Like, same thing in New York. The South Bronx, like, it looks like Dresden after World War II, but it's mostly Puerto Rican. I'm not sure, like, what the Puerto Ricans are doing wrong, but apparently, I've known enough Hispanics. No one likes Puerto Ricans. They're like the Irish of the Hispanics. But the thing is, all those junkies you see, they're all interracial. They're all living together and pooping on the streets and shooting up and dying. You know, at least they're.
It's the future our globalist wants for us, isn't it?
In a way, progress.
You could argue. Yeah. Exactly. It's progress. Everyone's getting along. Everyone's equally miserable and like near death, you know. Anyway, I wanted to bring up this real quick here too, because I remember you at the time you were, you know, you remember this. I heard years later after this, but Randy Weaver yesterday actually passed away at 74 years old, and of course he's had the famous standoff with the FBI back in 1993. We said, was it? Yeah, and of course they.
I'm
shot.
Gonna guess you're not a Seinfeld fan.
I used to be.
Do you remember Jay Peterman?
The
clothing catalog.
I do. Yeah.
Randy Weaver always looked like Jay Peterman to me.
Really?
But I remember watching the congressional hearings, because he got Jerry Spence, G-E-R-R-Y-S-P-E-N-C-E, as his lawyer. He used to be on TV all the time. He had one of those fringe jackets and kind of looked like a hippie, but never lost a case. And just because Jerry Spence wasn't a white separatist who sold shotguns to undercover officers, but he realized how Randy Weaver's rights have been violated.
Yeah.
Randy Weaver's just sitting there dignified. He's talking about them sending robots down with messages. And he's talking about the feds killing his dog, his wife,
yeah,
his kid.
And his son, yeah.
I was almost pushed to tears because it's like, man, this guy got rolled over bad. Yeah. And we were talking before filming, like Waco was like within 9 months of this.
Yep.
These were super hard Fed flexes like in the early 90s.
Yeah. To show you of what is to come, right? Because then you had what happened after the first, wait a minute, where remind me again, when was the first Gulf War? Was that 93? That broke out?
No, that was, I think, like 89, 90.
Oh, it was a little earlier then. Okay, yeah.
Kuwait,
yeah. Okay, yeah. So you had some of this stuff, right? And then you had Lee later.
That was under Bush, and it was amazing. Like the first Bush, and his approval rating went up to like over 90, which I don't think any president ever had right after we bombed Kuwait and rolled over, and marched toward Baghdad.
Saved all those babies from the being thrown on the floor from the incubators, right? So, I mean, that's...
He lost anyway. It only took him like a year and a half to like lose to Bill Clinton.
Yeah, yeah. And then Bill certainly improved things. And then you had, 9/11, right? Which is like this brief kind of detour of it. I mean, again, that was obviously to advance, foreign policy. And, you could very well argue that's like, yeah, essentially on behalf of the neocons in Israel in the extension, right? But you had that, it's the Muslims, right? The terrorists and stuff. And all these government things comes into place to like fight off the bad guy, right? And look at how now, right? How it's all turned in. I remember people talking about it at the time, like, look, the Department of Homeland Security, like all these things are Orwellian crazy shit. You don't want to have anything like this because eventually it will be turned against your own population, right?
Exactly. And just like with that, like the true and false over right and wrong, but like when 9/11 happened, and not that I think America is uniquely evil. I think America is obviously an empire like this far from completely collapsing. But my thought was, hey, the U.S. went in and bombed the hell, and the economic sanctions on Iraq, 1 million Iraqi women and children died between the first Gulf War and 9/11.
Yeah.
What the hell do you expect to happen? You expect them to just take it?
Yeah.
And it's not in this term of, well, we're the good guys and they deserve it. It's like, there's cause and effect, just like these. And I talk to these people who should know better. It's like, Putin's out of his mind. I'm like, so you believe whatever you're told? Like, you don't think that there was cause and effect and this is a power struggle, NATO and...
And I don't even believe that, like, the official... I think it's a gay op from government, essentially. If the very least, they allowed it to happen. They had intelligence. They knew about these people, right? The whole ADA story in Florida and, like, the flight school program. And you have, like... them standing down, not just, I mean, there's so many, there's too much to go into now, but there's so many
when
questions
I was,
around
when
this,
I was a kid in the 60s, I almost said the 50s, let's not date myself too much, but I remember, like, they didn't even call them Muslims. They called them Mohammedans. They didn't call it Islam. They called it Mohammedanism.
Mohammedans. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
And it was just, these were people you never heard of. And there's, okay, these obscure people who wear, like, gowns, like...
Yeah,
but it wasn't a threat. But I'm sure there was some cause and effect once the U.S. started supporting Israel, because that's the thing. Like, you ask a killer why they killed, and they might just be a pathological liar. But have you ever heard a Muslim terrorist say, "Well, we hate your freedom"? Yeah. Like one. It's always, man. Well, it's the U.S. supports Israel, and Israel, the claiming that they have a right to this ancestral land, even though they don't really look Middle Eastern,
yeah,
came in. And I always say, like, I mean, establishing Israel after World War II, like, Sylvester Stallone couldn't have come up with a more obvious plot for a sequel. It's like, okay, yeah, take the Jews and surround them on 800 miles on every side with people whose holy book says they're swine and devils, and see how that works out. I mean, what Hitler said, Madagascar, right?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
Give them Delaware. No one goes to Delaware. It's this basically what Delaware is. People stop to pee between Philly and Baltimore and D.C. Relocate the Jews to Delaware. I mean, and, give a check to everyone who lives in Delaware now and Let them have Delaware.
Well, now and they want Ukraine, right? The old Khazarian Empire. They want to rebuild.
Oh God, that's like what's the latest on the Khazar theory? Has that been entirely debunked, or that one seemed to make sense to me?
Yeah, I saw some pushback against it, and you know, there's genetic discussions whether you can find gene evidence or traces of this. But at least historically, I think it's true that they did convert. I mean, recently you can say any people converted because it hasn't been with us. Judaism or Christianity or any religion or belief system hasn't been with us from like day one. So everyone has converted at some point. But right. Regardless, I'm saying there was like I guess one of the theories is right. They were like actually an established like Jewish sect, right? And then these Khazarians, which was more like a Turkic kind of people.
Right.
That later on kind of like converted over to that. And then that, and then some people like argue, well, they're the bad guys kind of thing. But, Ashkenazi, Sephardim, I mean, there's obviously subgroups here anyway.
How amazing is it that like the dominant Jewish group has the word Nazi in their name?
It's like, what was that? Yeah, Ashkenaz, Nazi, right? They're the real Nazis. Let's do a boomer take on that. No, I'm just joking there. But no, I think, it's interesting because, you have all this crazy shit's going on right now. It's just, we're this close to collapse, right? And at every single level of like, the going back to that meme, right? There's a new wave of like the current thing, right? Whatever the current thing is, but yeah. Magically, every major story and advancement like that kind of fits into the greater narrative, right? People call it now the Great Reset. That's kind of caught on, right? But you could call it the collapse. You can call it the New World Order, even whatever term you prefer. But that overarching like. Our world is being reformed in their image, right? These globalists, these international forces.
As much as I'm against mind reading, I suspect most people truly believe the news happens organically.
Yeah.
And they don't think it's chosen and sculpted for them, which is like, that's going to be a big problem. Because like I said earlier about Mark Twain, you cannot convince people they've been fooled. You can fool them, but don't convince them. Like, it's too humiliating. Like, you mean I've gotten this passion? I was out on the streets chanting and it was a lie? Like, that's too much for most people.
Oh, yeah. They'll run to the comfort of the lie before they face the harsh truth.
I mean, I think Russia is cool as hell. My favorite boxers are Ukrainian. Like, but it's not my fight. And
no.
I don't know anyone who thinks it's going to be good for America.
It's not going to be. And now Finland and Sweden is going to be joining NATO, effectively putting a crosshairs on them, like for the first time in a very long time. Like if you are seeking to replace or, exchange essentially the little autonomy and so-called independence that we do have left, like we're already like we have powerful forces that are trying to destroy our countries, they're trying to replace, the native population in these countries and so forth. But we have some autonomy, right? Joining NATO for the sake of security certainly is not going to do it. And it's just going to polarize the world further. And we're literally, and I showed you the article, we can return to this a bit later then, but the Wall Street Journal, right? Where is it? Here it is, right? The U.S. should show it can win a nuclear war, right? They're like, they're gunning for this. Absolutely.
As someone who like went through the Cold War, born in 1960, like I was born right around the time of the Cuban Missile Crisis. All they drilled into your head, like, you know what a great movie? You ever seen The Atomic Cafe?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Classic.
This is what that's the propaganda I grew up with. Was a nuclear war was imminent. You had to build a fallout shelter under your front lawn and, hoard 100,000 years worth of canned goods and everything. But never back then do I remember any newspaper saying, well, we could win this. So, why not? It's like everyone's lost their mind. The last 2 years, the entire world has been gaslit. But like, that's kind of irresponsible to be talking about nuclear. These same people who will like slay you for using the wrong pronoun are freely talking about nuclear war. That's I don't know the words overused, but terrifying.
Yeah, words is violence, right? Words is violence, but we can actually antagonize and intentionally push the world to the brink of nuclear, destruction. That's fine. No, don't worry. Because my Ukraine, right? Yeah, it's sickening. Yeah, there's some footage, I guess, in this one here. But yeah, no, so they're kind of talking about here Washington might study Cold War era practices that had major effect on Soviet policymaking. In other words, we got to ramp it up and scare them, right? And on the other side of the flip side of that, Russia have said, like, basically, anybody that messes with us, like, we'll nuke you, you know. And they have, like, you know, pretty extraordinary capabilities right now.
I think
as well.
More than the U.S. at this point.
Yes,
right?
I mean the hypersonic missiles. Then they had the new, and I think they bring that up in the beginning here too. The Sarmat, right? The new type of intercontinental ballistic missile carrying a heavy nuclear payload, and they've been testing that and stuff like that and warning, right? But again, like, I mean, it's obvious that the U.S., NATO, the West in the extension, and those forces controlling the West is using Ukraine as a proxy. If people really cared about Ukrainians and what happened, they would want to see an end to this conflict, because right now they're basically just sending them into, they're arming them and sending them into the meat grinder and saying, yay, go Ukraine, you know, kind of thing.
And completely, like I said, it's a video game, completely oblivious to like what the blowback might be or whether their city is. I mean, I live in the Atlanta area, unfortunately, still. We're near the CDC, and I don't know enough about bio warfare, but could a terrorist like blow up or do something to just unleash Ebola throughout Atlanta?
Yeah.
The fact that like we're even discussing these things. Is it like as a possibility? Well, we might have to go to nuclear war. It's like, worry about the pronouns and like all the idiots. Like, you're talking about the world ending.
Yeah.
Rather than some mentally disturbed person getting their feelings hurt. And like, everything's upside down. It's crazy. And I don't use the jargon, but yeah, talk about clown world.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's insane. I mean, and it's actually like the movie Dr. Strangelove. They're just like somebody accidentally, like this guy who was worried about his precious bodily fluids started World War III.
Or like a Charles Bronson movie, a Death Wish, right? That's that's basically what it is. It's a Death Wish. In a way, weirdly enough, maybe it's like a, collectively speaking, like a subconscious like desire to just like end things, because it's just such in a rotten bad state right now. I don't know. There's obviously, you know, meddling forces here and stuff like that, right? But it's this idea that like, you know, replacing one conflict with another, and now conveniently, as we said before, Jim, you know, now it's like as a consequence of this, we're getting, you know, petrol, oil and gas shortages, we're getting food shortages. All these things are happening, just spiraling out of control because of this.
But I wonder, too, because everyone's been gaslit and lied to in ways they never have systematically for the last 2 years, but still seem, except for, you know, internet arguing and stuff, still seem to hold it together. But you wonder, like, when they finally let loose, is it going to be like nuclear war level anger? It's a real,
it could be. Yeah,
I know the times I've gotten hyper violent in my life, it's because I held it in for too long.
Yeah.
And then somebody looked at me the wrong way and bam. But I've got a little concern that's where we are. Is, you know, oh, nuclear war, fine, it's better than just sitting in front of a screen and not being able to go out and having to wear a mask. It's like wow. Like nothing close to that in my entire lifetime. And I've said many times too, like, I think everyone knows that the world's going to end one day, but wired in the human DNA, you think it's going to happen 5 minutes after you die.
Yeah. You're like, never like, going to be,
you know,
it.
Bad things are going to happen, but not during my life.
Well, and then you do have religious factions who are like, you know, actually wanting this, because, you know, that will mean the, you know, the savior will come back or whatever, you know, eschatology essentially, right? That's like this end of the world-ism. And there's like a, right, you know, like a, almost a fascination with that, right? It's like a conclusion to the story in a way, right?
It's, I mean, like just because you have this lust to fulfill the book of Revelation, like, bring the world down just so you're not insecure that maybe what you believe in was nonsense. It's crazy thinking, but yeah, to want the world dead, it's like, just kill yourself. Like, don't spread the self-hatred throughout.
No, again,
the world.
It's the crab mentality. Like, if I can't have it, no one will, you know, kind of like psycho sociopathic behavior, right?
That's taking down actually everyone. The girl I wound up going to prison over confessed on an online forum that the main reason she put me away was that, so no other, like, if I can't have them, nobody's going to have them.
Yeah, right, exactly. True psychotic, right? Let's do
this
one.
Well, I mean, how psychotic was I getting involved with someone like that? That's what I've finally learned over the past few years. It's like, well, Jim, there's this pattern, and you know what? You were right about every one of them, but
You got to learn to listen to that voice. Exactly, right? You got to learn from it and listen to that voice. That's hard sometimes. Yeah. We're going to take a break in a little bit. I'm going to continue. And I want to ask you about, you know, it's funny because, like, literally as the world is falling apart and the opportunities would, of course, be great. Again, I don't want to get into this too deeply now, so we'll wait. But, you know, to kind of a little teaser for the audience here. Talk about some of the drama and all that stuff happening that's been unfolding over the last couple of weeks. I kind of see this period as like an amazing recruitment opportunity, essentially, right? Because there's a lot of normies out there now that, like, what the hell, what the hell is going on, right? And you'd think then that the right wing or whatever you want to call it would be like unified and, like, you know, pushing an information battle to, like, you know, gobble up as many as possible, utilize the times and stuff. No, instead it's descended into this spurgy clown world shit. So I want to ask you more about that later. I know you were roped into that a little bit as well. So that's something coming up here. But this one, you lived in Portland for a while. Did you? I'm not sure if you knew this journalist, but basically, crazy, yes. Antifa, lunatic, left-wing journalist. Tell us about what happened here.
Oh, man. Back in 2017, because Portland was like the Bermuda Triangle for me. We wanted to get away from, like, the insanity of L.A. We lived in L.A., me and my first wife, for 7 years. From 87 to 94, we lived through the Rodney King riots, the Northridge earthquake. I think in those 7 years, L.A. County went from 17 to 43% Hispanic. And, you know, crack wars, the O.J., like, everything. We thought we'd find some peace in Portland because it was this – Portland back in the early 90s was this – I remember joking, like, this isn't a city. This is like a Swiss villa. It's beautiful. You can see Mount Hood, like, 80 miles away. No homeless people. But now what's become of it? My God. But I was the bête noir because I moved there. I was not welcome. All these scandals related to the magazine I did, like the – there was an obscenity trial. A guy shot at the White House and quoted me. Three British, like, goth Nazis killed themselves. One of them sent me life savings. So I was, not well, but to see what's become of it. But anyway, back in 2017, there was this guy, and he's well-intentioned. He's this ginger guy named Alan. He was a Proud Boy. And he wrote I understand, I'm not into men's clubs or anything, but I understand the need for the Proud Boys as far as, like, protecting Ann Coulter, like, to be able to speak because the left had gotten so violent. But this guy, Alan, did a review of my book, The Redneck Manifesto, and he said, this could be the Proud Boy Bible. I'm like, well, what, like, not, there's really, it's a book about the history of the demonization of poor whites and how they were, but I've been blamed for the Proud, and this article basically blamed me for bringing street violence to Portland. And it was an unflattering profile, but Portland's so nuts. Some of these people were, and they're always trying to out purify each other with the extreme leftism. Someone dumped a ton of topsoil into the parking lot of this publication. At the time, because these people are big on guilt by association, there was a woman, Chloe Udaly, who used to have a little bookstore called Reading Frenzy. And when the Redneck Manifesto came out, she invited me to read there, read the book, you know, and place was packed, not a problem back then. She had since become the Portland, one of the three Portland city commissioners. And people were grilling her. It's like, why did you let this neo-Nazi racist creep speak? And she was, and, you know, she disavowed me as hard as she could. But this guy, Mike Bivins, B-I-V-I-N-S, he and a couple other people, they heard this rumor that Chloe had put, yeah, look at this haunted little elf. Not a happy guy.
No.
But he and another, they were, like, railing on Chloe. It's like, why did you host this guy? But someone, because Chloe used to go out with a friend of mine, Sean Tejerachi, who's a graphics genius. He does pretty much all of my book covers and everything. But somehow rumor started that Chloe put money on my books when I was in jail in Portland. And this Mike Bivens guy kept being like, did you? Yeah. I'm like, oh, please. Like, they photoshopped that picture. Like, I asked Sean. It's like, that's the worst picture. It's also the first picture that comes up when you search my name. So
of course.
Sore spot right there. But I said to him, Mike, like, you know, I have a podcast. Come on. We can talk. I'll tell you everything I know about Chloe. But you got to face me man to man. Like, you know, you just want something from me to nail somebody else who's never been unkind, and he wouldn't do it. But then, like, I see that this guy had this Mike Bivens. I'm like, when? And this is 5 years later. I'm like, Mike Bivens is the guy who investigated the alt-right, you know, self-described journalist, and now he's being charged, arrested with attacking two synagogues and trying to set a mosque on fire. First thing I thought is hate crime hoax, like, obviously.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
The weird thing, a couple of things that make this completely different than other hate crime hoaxes, and I'm kind of a scholar on hate crime hoaxes. Portland, up until this point, had my favorite all-time hate crime hoax. Number one, I mean, once I interviewed Richard Spencer like 5 years ago, and I know how unpopular he is. I don't know why that happened, but no comment beyond that. But I asked him, like, you know, are you a white supremacist? Like, well, supreme in what? Like, he's like, they're supreme in my heart, but clearly they're not the best runners, you know. Would you agree with me? Blacks are supreme at giving their kids interesting names. This woman's was her name was Azalea Cooley. Black, lesbian, wheelchair bound, right, and dying of cancer. And she told the cops that, like, her house had been spray painted with the N-word and swastikas and everything. And there were vigils, there were parades, like, sympathetic, you know, allies put up cameras. The cameras didn't work. The cops put up cameras to film her house from, like, an adjoining apartment. But what did they see on the video camera? Azalea's on her back porch in her wheelchair. She gets up, stands up, walks, and plants a little wooden cross in a flower pot and lights it. She was lighting her, burning her own crosses.
Yep. There you go.
Up until this week, that was my favorite all-time hate crime hoax.
Yeah.
This guy is completely different. He's a white male. I don't think he claims Jew or anything. Mike Bivens. I don't think Bivens is a, you know, some kind of Germanic, Ashkenazi, Yiddish hybrid. He was a rabid street, called himself a street journalist, like, filming the fights between Proud Boys and Patriot Prayer against Antifa for years. That's what he was known for. And he wrote for Willamette Week, the ones that did the hit piece on me. He wrote for Al Jazeera. You know, suddenly he was an expert on hate in the streets. But then I started looking into his Twitter history. In the last 6 months, he's saying how great Elon Musk is, that abortion's a crime, that Kamala Harris and Joe Biden are evil, and that the media underreports hate crimes against whites. I'm like, what happened to this guy? Apparently, like, over the winter, he got divorced, and he was living in hotels and out on the street half the time. But what's really weird, it was late April, early May. He attacked, threw a rock through one synagogue window. He I don't know how you pronounce it in German, die Juden, like D-I-E-J-U-D-E-N. I don't know if he thought that meant die Jews. I think it just means the Jews in German. Did that on another one.
Yes,
like,
it does.
You got to, like, read the handbook before you become a fake Nazi. Then he tried immolating this mosque while a prayer meeting was going on twice and failed. Then he comes back and does something else to one of the synagogues, like, that the following Wednesday, then marches himself to a local TV station. There's surveillance footage of him, like, knocking on the door of the TV station. The unidentified worker at the TV station said he confessed to the crime. He showed them the hammer and the ice pick that he used to smash windows in this synagogue. And he said, I'm going to come back Friday, but first I want you to research. I want you to contact these three religious organizations, and I want you to research my crimes, which is weird because usually a hate crime hoaxer is trying to, like, say they were victimized. But this is a white guy. The idiot comes back Friday, and it promptly gets arrested. But the whole situation is, like, the weirdest hate crime hoax I've ever seen, or maybe it wasn't a hoax. Only two possibilities. Like, either he's just a natural-born fanatic, and he went from, like, you know, rabid Antifa guy, but still had such a cartoonish idea of what a right winger was. Maybe he thought he'd get scene clout. Oh, you know, I'm right wing now, so I'll start bombing, you know, or I'll start.
Yeah, because that's what we do, right?
So. So that's one. Maybe he's just, like, basic that way.
Right.
The fact that he wanted to get attention for it. My theory for this is he puts so much effort into LARPing as a right wing guy for six But like friends, because it was a new Twitter account, he'd been knocked off Twitter, but they said this change was like 2 or 3 or 4 years. But I'm thinking this guy LARPed as a stereotypical right wing guy. And so what's he going to like the fact that he wanted to get caught? I suspect the guy's whole deal is he's going to say, well, I was radicalized. You know, does this ring a bell? I was radicalized by alt-right memes.
Yeah, oh, yes, of course.
Okay, right. You know, yeah. who did that video that's conveniently been scrubbed from existence?
Yep.
I think this guy is going to go for the I was, and this is a reason, like, look, I started reading this stuff and I thought Elon Musk was cool, and like, immediately I'm burning mosques and attacking synagogues.
So you're saying that just the Elon Musk connection, because that's interesting, obviously, where that's developing
now. No, it was
now.
A ton of
this
things. Like
before?
Something about, like, there's this tamale vendor in my street, like Portland's turning into Mexico.
Yeah.
It was all this stuff that you would think somebody who followed right-wing Twitter would say.
Right.
My hunch is that it was all insincere, but he was just trying to build this foolproof, like, way to just completely eliminate any kind of that sort of speech.
Yeah.
Or maybe he's just nuts.
But. Yeah, exactly. No, that, of course, it's a very high possibility as well. But yeah, no, it could be, yeah, a little, some mini gay op in order to get a life-changing story later on or something, right? Like, or this is what I was radicalized by, therefore right. We have to, you know, mitigate, control, limit this type of information, blah, blah, blah. You could see it, right? Yeah. So the headlines write themselves on some of these some of these stories, right?
It's insane how that, I mean, they got the diversity they wanted, and it's weird. I mean, when I moved there in 94, it was such a safe city. You could pretty much walk naked through downtown at night and people would just think you're weird. Now, like, you have to carry a gun in downtown Portland.
Man,
at night.
It's insane. Absolutely insane, right? Yeah, so synagogues and stuff and a mosque and again, even like, obviously that's 101 is like, okay, well, how, if you were sincere, how would this advance any of the issues that you're concerned with? Well, obviously, it's just, again, it's literally the worst thing you can do, right?
I know a guy that lives in Portland. I knew him back when I lived there, but he was working with the homeless. Like, he had a job at some like homeless agency, but the stories he told me, the things that they get away with, and any minority worker there will just bill the company for 200 hours and not do any work. And Portland's one of these cities where they're rolling out these free crack pipes and crack kits. And I mean, he saw crocodile there and just all sorts of insanity. The guy also, his really nice guy, but his wife left him to become a street junkie in Portland. I called him the other day because I wanted to ask him about this Mike Bivens situation. He was on his way downtown Portland. He was summoned to appear in court. His junkie wife, who has like flesh-eating disease, like all these junkie conditions, apparently got knocked up by some other homeless person and had a baby, and they both abandoned it. And they delivered my friend papers because apparently the way the law works in Oregon, now he's responsible for this baby.
Wow, really? Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
Portland's, I mean...
What a great father. He's going to be a great father, too. So, you know.
Well, he's not even the dad.
No, I know.
He's going to get nailed for it. Yeah.
Man. Wow.
But the transformation of that city. But it was strange. I mean, like I said, I had so many bad things happen. And I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And yeah.
When did you finally leave there? How many years were you there?
I was there from 94 to 2005. I left in
that's a long,
May of 2005.
You endured for a long time. That's more patience than I would have, for sure.
Well, I mean, I was in Oregon 11 years. 2.5 of them were incarcerated. But when I got, it just got worse. And I've told the stories about being, like, stalked by the, you didn't even hear the word Antifa 20 years ago in Portland, but there were the anti-racist skinheads that who had carte blanche to beat up anybody they called a Nazi.
Yeah. So same as today.
Yeah, so it's been nuts, but it's like whatever was wrong with Portland has metastasized over the years.
Oh, yeah. So do you think we'll get any answers in this trial dates? And like, do you think more will come to light of like motivations and stuff? Or
There might be a link there where he appeared in court. And I don't know if you ever, you know who David, son of Sam Berkowitz was?
Oh, yeah.
Like do you ever see the photos of him when he was being like, you know, on his perp walk? He had this weird, placid smile. I think I linked to that there. Like, if you look up Berkowitz, links around, but like when this guy appeared in court, he was making these inappropriate grins and he flexed his arm and everything. There's David Burke. Like, that's scarier than if he looked malevolent.
That's
he just shot, six different people at night and terrorized a city when the city was like Armageddon anyway. New York in the mid 70s was hell on earth.
Yeah.
But there's a court appearance or arraignment or something. Yeah, yeah. Look how like he's just acting wacky.
Let me go forward here a bit. Well, this is like, we've seen so many of these like mass shooters
and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. That are like completely whacked out. And like, obviously they're like, they're mentally, if they're not, I'm not going to say, he's mind control. I'm going to say that. But, some of these people are like clearly been like, manipulated.
What I noticed kind of too is like his former friends in Portland were, Mike's having some mental health issues, but.
Yeah.
They would never gave that. It's like, why didn't I say I was mentally ill? But I don't think I would have gotten the same slack in Portland. Anyway.
Right. Exactly. No, that's interesting. Yeah. No. So some of these individuals, there are, okay. It's not, here we go. Now it's loading. They're clearly, they're attracted to all the,
Making weird. So he's, who knows, MK Ultra, maybe he's just some kind of
just drugs and enough meth or fentanyl or both. And then just being in these political spheres and stuff. And then I'm a right winger now. And now, and this is what we do. We go and bomb synagogues and stuff because that's where I've read in the paper.
That's what makes me suspect that he's, look at this guy.
Something's not right with this guy.
Obviously. demon possessed elf or whatever.
Exactly right.
But yeah, that's such an odd synagogue assault. That's I've never really seen it.
It's funny though,
you deal with harassers and stuff. The only thing where it's not tedious, just like with the hate crime hoaxes, they're so samey. I guess it's a little. It's refreshing that this guy took a new angle on it. I've never really seen it.
But it's funny how
these components.
All that's he's like, bye everybody, and at the end there. I wonder if it's interesting that it's always so you can have a complete lunatic and stuff, but somehow his behavior is then automatically attached to rational debates around the issue of should we have open borders or whatever, the replacement thing or whatever, right? Basically, immigration, the wider discussion of that, they can take that and then they can attach that with this.
Yeah, anybody who has these opinions is mentally ill and must be put away. Or,
exactly. Yep. Again, we got to control that or something.
That's pretty Soviet,
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, but
any kind of dissenting thought is you don't disagree, you're nuts.
I think that is where this is going. I think ultimately they'll say, no, the people that don't adhere to our view, they have mental problems, and we're going to need to medicate against that too. Because otherwise it's a threat to our democracy and it will put lives at risk, and it's the only sensible thing to do,
I remember 10 years ago, somebody in the AMRIN comments was saying something about they're going to, DMS-5 or whatever, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, where they determine what's mentally ill, that they're going to come up with something called chronic bias.
Yeah, yes.
And that just thinking that, preferring your own kind or holding not believing in equality, that's going to be recategorized as mental illness.
And, they have things like this, right? You have basically now medications and pills are going to solve a pill that could prevent racism, right?
I did an article about this pill. It's called Give the Bigots a Pill. I did it for Tacky's Mag.
Mm-hmm.
It's some kind of heart medication.
Yes,
it was like calms a side you down, effect. But it also prevents you from... What was the study? It was 5-10 years ago where they found there's certain kids who didn't show any bias, but it was because they didn't have some sort of protective mechanism in their minds. Basically, what this pill does is
beta
it weakens blocker. Your defenses against.
Yeah, beta blocker propranolol, right? I think that's it. And lower doses and stuff. Exactly. So basically, you're giving up, right? You basically have no more concern.
But the metric they used even 10 years ago, because this is a little over 10 years ago, to determine racism in the same article, Give the Bigots a Pill, was the IAI, it's the Harvard Implicit Association Bias Test.
Mm-hmm.
Or what they do is, and this is the scientific idea behind this, they start you off slow and black faces, white faces, good, bad, evil, dangerous. And they speed it up so fast that you can't possibly fake it.
Oh, I remember this one.
Unleash your unconscious bias.
Right, right.
And I took the test five times, scored five different results entirely.
Yeah.
So this completely unscientific and fraudulent test that they're using, they're going to use as an excuse to medicate people into lowering the defenses and, you know, getting raped or attacked or...
Okay, it's got to be the first time ever that's happened, eh? Yeah. Oh, my God. Anyway, that's good. Let's take a break here, Jim, and we'll get into... Yeah, I mean, there's other stuff here. Drama. I want to talk about the shortages and stuff. The Biden regime is driving us completely into the ground here. But what do you got coming out? Tell us about some of the books you do have and if there's something new that people should look out for.
You know, what's interesting is if you can get me in that Answer Me shirt, yeah. That's where I made my bones, that magazine I did in the early 90s that caused all sorts of scandals. Man, dealing with a printer right now. They printed it 5 years ago, and I decided to do a new reprint. Nick Bugis did the new cover, and it's going to be hardcover, glossy paper. Every original page of this ancient magazine that was done 30 years ago has been colorized. Nick Bugis colorized almost all the line art. Some of the original artists colorized it too, but... And the thing's been delayed, paper shortages, all this stuff. Earlier this week, I sent them the files, and I was supposed to put the down. I was supposed to pay in full for the print run on Wednesday, but now it might not happen because they're upset about the content in the magazine.
Oh no, you're kidding, really?
Yeah.
Oh man, it's always something, isn't it? Like, what
even
is
though,
that
and
to
it's
you,
funny,
you
like
know?
The salesman, and he's a nice enough guy, but like. He was, and I'm like, guys, you printed this 5 years ago, but like we're talking, all we're talking about are specs and how many, how much, what kind of paper. But like he didn't, I guess he didn't even know what they were printing, but he gave me this. He's like, what's in the magazine, Jim? Like I betrayed him, like I lied to him or, and I'm like, it's, you know, it's something we did 30 years ago. And I guess like the three of the issues, one was about murder, one was about suicide, one was about rape. He's like, oh, rape. Great. And I'm like, but yeah,
he knows.
You don't even try to say, you know, it's not hate in the way that it, like,
right.
Just let them decide.
Because
so
he knows, the pressure is working and they're already like, no, you know, bailing out, preparing to like get attacked by someone because here's the printer that did it, you know, put them out of business.
They've been stalling for 3 days now though, because I think that they'd get a lot of money for this and the economy's not great.
Right.
They haven't said no. They just haven't given me an answer since
still
Monday.
Still so thinking about possible. It, I guess. But I think it sucks. But someone out there should be willing to print it. So it's just a matter of finding
someone.
There's
a print on demand place in the U.S. that gave me a prototype. I think the reason they printed it last summer because it's all completely automated. I don't even think a human sees it. But the problem is the difference between a print run from a professional printer and print on demand is. Per copy, it's going to be like 2.5 times more expensive to get print on.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, that sucks. Yeah, it's just different times. If you want something, you know, physical copy of something.
On the right there, the gender psychosis, that's a Nick Bugis cover.
Yep.
Got a couple in there. New Church Ladies is Nick Bugis. But again, that's the only one I designed was the bomb inside my brain. But yeah, Sean Tedjarachi did the, he's just like fantastic designer. He did Whiteness, the Original Sin. But Nick drew the, if you scroll down, yeah, New Church Ladies, that's a Nick drawing too.
Nice. So that's a new, is that like a reprint or updated version of that or something? Or
These are all print on demand too. And those are like, the way it works is someone orders one and they print one, you know.
Gotcha.
So
okay. Well, that's good. Yeah, exactly.
Because
nice
the
easy.
One thing about this room, I mean, it's a nice big room and I converted it from a garage, but I was supposed to get 220 cases of this book like here in July. That may or may not happen.
Yeah. All right, we'll see what happens. But yeah, let us know how that goes. People can keep an update on this, of course, at jimgo.net. You're on Gab, you're on Twitter as well, so you give people updates there in terms of if and when it becomes available, right?
Telegram too, yeah. Just Jim Goad.
Telegram as well. Okay, good stuff. All right, guys, we're going to take a quick little break here. We'll be back in part two with Jim Goad, getting to, well, a lot of other things, but some of the drama as well. All right, stay tuned.
Fantastic.